And with that, I've got to end the show. I got to end the show. My time's up, Dave. Call in tomorrow. We're going to do a show on the elections, one of my favorite topics. This is Mark Levine signing off.
Congress and the American people. Gonzalez, however, says he will stay and fix the problems. A federal lawsuit filed yesterday in San Francisco against the Veterans Administration seeks to represent as many as 800,000 U.S. troops. The suit says the VA is failing to provide adequate mental health care and disability pay to those returning from Afghanistan and Iraq. The draft plan for military operations in Iraq has U.S. troops there through 2009. General David Petraeus' plan sets a series of goals to reach a sustainable level of security in 2 years. The Pentagon stressed this is a planning document. In Baghdad, top U.S. Ambassador Ryan Crocker accused Iran of increasing its support of militias in Iraq. In this, just the second meeting between the two countries in more than 30 years, Crocker admitted to several heated exchanges over 7 hours of talks. The goal of the meeting? To work on stabilizing Iraq. In Afghanistan, the Taliban's extended the deadline for the release of 23 Koreans taken hostage last week. The militants demand Taliban prisoners be released and South Korea withdraw its troops. Negotiations are ongoing. A new survey shows a sharp drop in Muslim support for suicide bombings. The Pew Research Center survey looked at data from 47 countries. In Lebanon alone, those who said such attacks are sometimes justified dropped from 74% to 34%. 5 nurses and a doctor imprisoned for more than 8 years in Libya are back home. They were released last night and flown to Bulgaria, where their president gave them an immediate pardon. The medics were accused of deliberately infecting children with AIDS, a charge they have consistently denied. Same-sex couples in Washington can now register as domestic partners. A new law went into effect yesterday. The law does not, however, provide them the same rights as heterosexual married couples or civil unions allowed in some states. You're listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news coming up next.
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm washing my car. You want to help?
No, I don't want to be a polluter.
Whoa, I'm not polluting. I'm just washing my car.
If your car wash water is going down the street and into the bay, then you're a polluter.
Oh, really?
I'll help you clean this up, but what you should do next time is go to a local car wash.
And pay money?
Pay money for them to recycle the water and keep all that pollution out of the bay. I think it's really worth it.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
A study released today shows that lowering your cholesterol too much may increase your risk of cancer. Researchers found that patients who take statin drugs to lower cholesterol had a higher risk of cancer. The study did not show, however, that the statin drugs themselves are cause for concern. The FDA says the recent recall of 80 brands of canned meat products may involve millions of cans still on store shelves. Investigators say 16 out of 17 cans tested contain the bacterium that causes botulism. Natural Balance dog food has also been recalled. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says last year the U.S. recorded the lowest traffic death rate in recent history. Agency officials cited tough law enforcement and increased safety features in vehicles. Netflix posted a 50% increase in quarterly net income, but also announced a decline in subscribers for the first time in its eight-year history. Bookseller, online bookseller Amazon, says its second quarter earnings jumped 250%. Excellent sales are the cause. Light sweet crude is trading at $73.56 a barrel. As we said, the Dow was down 226 points to close at 13,716. The NASDAQ was down 51 and the S&P down 31. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Okay! Don't you!
South America!
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Six minutes past the hour, this is Tuesday. And it's the day after the great YouTube debate, and it is the day of the great what do you want to call what happened with Alberto Torture Boy Gonzalez today? Is it a calling to account? Is it a rare display of guts on the part of Senate Democrats? Could it be that maybe there's some stem cell research that's actually being done, and there have been stem cells implanted where spines should be? Sure sounded like it today. I've got a bunch of sound, and we're gonna go and listen at some point, I hope, to what went on in the Senate today in the grilling of Alberto Gonzalez. The man should be in prison. The man should, at the very least, be facing charges. He has perjured himself. He has dishonored this country. He should be disbarred for authoring the opinion that says that, it's not torture if it doesn't cause significant bodily injury, organ failure, or death. Unfortunately, he hasn't been, and he has not been in contempt, and he has not been charged with perjury, obstruction of justice, or any of the other things that George Bush would have to pardon him for. But if you haven't watched it all day long, you'll get to hear some of it this evening, and I think you're going to be at least pleased to see that people are coming out and mounting a full frontal attack on this criminal. Alberto Gonzalez is a criminal. We've got to start, of course, talking about people and discussing issues in language that indicates we actually understand what's going on, and Alberto Gonzalez is a criminal. He is no less a criminal than John Mitchell was a criminal in the Nixon administration. I think actually he's probably worse than John Mitchell. There was an exchange about we'll let it speak for itself. I've got several clips noted that I hope that we will get to. Also, backing up just a little bit, we have I've got a clip of John Edwards from last night's debates on CNN, in which YouTube was, you know, the YouTube questions were put out there for people. And I think it will be beneficial to hear that as well. It was, if you were listening to Strictly Confidential last week, you heard the question that was played for Senator Edwards, coming from the minister who, well, I tell you what, let's just start right out by listening to this this exchange, if you will.
Most Americans agree it was wrong and unconstitutional to use religion to justify slavery, segregation, and denying women the right to vote. So why is it still acceptable to use religion to deny gay Americans their full and equal rights?
Fair question, huh?
I think Reverend Longquire asks a very important question, which is whether fundamentally, whether it's right for any of our faith beliefs to be imposed on the American people when we're president of the United States. I do not believe that's right. I feel enormous personal conflict about this issue. I want to end discrimination. I want to do some of the things that I just heard Bill Richardson talking about, standing up for equal rights, substantive rights, civil unions, the things that Chris Dodd just talked about. I think that's something everybody on this stage will commit themselves to as President of the United States. But I personally have been on a journey on this issue. I feel enormous conflict about it. As I think a lot of people know, my wife Elizabeth spoke out a few weeks ago, and she actually supports gay marriage. I do not. But this is a very, very difficult issue for me, and I recognize and have enormous respect for people who have a different view of it.
All right, I call BS. This is an enormously difficult issue for you? Why is it an enormously difficult issue for you, John? Are you gay? Is there some guy out there that you want to marry, John? This is not an enormously difficult issue for you. This is an enormously politicized issue for you, and you're trying to use your wife, your ailing, sick wife, to split the difference for you. And it is cynical, it is cold, cruel, heartless, calculated, and you ought to be better than that, John Edwards. Period. This false dichotomy of gay marriage versus civil unions is utter and unmitigated crap. If you were listening to Strictly Confidential last night, you heard a news story about the guy who was ordered to pay $1,250 worth of alimony to his wife every month. Well, his wife entered into a domestic partnership with another woman. She took the other woman's name. They are living in a committed lesbian relationship. So the guy went to court and said, "Hey, stop my alimony. I'm free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last." Because California law says alimony ends when the person receiving the alimony remarries. The court told him to go piss up a rope because the woman is only in a domestic partnership. She is not married. So basically, this poor dude winds up having to subsidize his former wife's new partnership. I don't think anybody in the gay community would suggest that that is the right outcome. I'll leave that to people in the gay community to answer. But there is an entire... Look, there's a reason to start dealing with gay marriage, and that is gay divorce. Okay, there is nobody out there, I don't think, who is simple enough to think that all gay marriages are going to work any more than all hetero marriages are going to work. And what happens in the interplay of one of those marriages coming apart is very, very, very important, because marriage breaking up is painful. It is destructive. It is agonizing, and it must be done fairly and it must be done judiciously, justly, and we're not in a position to start worrying about that. The other reason I call BS is because the religious right, the religion industry, has done such a fine job of casting this as a First Amendment issue. They're going to make churches start marrying people. Marriage is first and foremost a civil governmental issue. Okay? What is it, Agnes? No, what is... Marriage is something that happens at the courthouse, not at a church. And as a consequence of that, if someone wants to get married, it is a governmental function. That's why when the preacher, or whomever, who does the marrying ceremony, signs off on the little document, he turns it in at the courthouse. Because then it's registered in the book of marriages. And it becomes a civil record. And it is proof of entitlement to a variety of civil rights in this country. John Edwards did not answer the question. He did not answer the question Reverend Longcrier asked, and that is... And he tried to later. I don't have that part of the clip. He danced around it again, and that is, why should religion be used as a justification to deny a civil right? And Edwards said, well, you know, I disagree with it, but I would never, as president, let my faith-based beliefs intrude on that decision, which is hair splitting, and like I said, it's really far more than or far less than what John Edwards should be doing. And it's disturbing to see this kind. You know, usually when the word triangulation comes up, it's used in reference to Senator Clinton, but not this time. Not this time. This time it's John Edwards who was triangulating, hoping that perhaps the civil rights-oriented community, gay and straight alike, who understand that marriage being a civil right is a civil matter and not a religious First Amendment matter at all, might play look, see the birdie, with the birdie being Elizabeth Edwards out here attending gay pride parades and saying she advocates for full-on marriage, while John is over here courting the Southern Baptists, who will not vote for him anyway. After all, the imperial wizard of the Southern Baptist Convention, Dick Land, has already said the race is Fred Thompson's to lose. Never mind the fact that Fred Thompson and all the other Republicans running are just awash in ex-wives, awash in disdain for the sanctity of marriage, and that at the same time, John Edwards, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, most of the Democratic field, have had one spouse each, at all. But, you know, that's to be expected because the Southern Baptist Convention is a racist organization, a bigoted organization, an organization founded and maintained on prejudice and hate. So it comes as no surprise that Dick Land would be out there declaring that they're... Well, why the Southern Baptist Convention is allowed to maintain 501c3 charitable organization status is beyond me. So there you have that. Oh, by the way, and you know, you're welcome to chime in on this. I just can't get my mind around the fact that there are actually politicians running for the presidency who think that this is a religious issue. Now, granted, the Old Testament and the New Testament and the Quran and some Hindu script and Hindu scripture, and for all I know, Buddhist scripture, Jainist scripture, ancient Norse mythology, not the Greek gods, because they kind of did it all the time, the South American animist cults, Shintoism, every organized religion on the face of the planet may have some holy book that says, boys better not do it with boys! That is immaterial in the United States of America. If members of those various and sundry superstition organizations want to hold fast to those bigoted 5,000-year-old declarations, they're welcome to. The First Amendment to the United States Constitution gives them the right to believe all the silly crap that they want to for as long as they wish. And the rest of us have to just sort of sit by and go, hey, look, you know, it's the First Amendment. They get to believe a bunch of silly crap. But that is not upon the rock upon which this country was founded. It is a secular country. This is a civil country with guarantees of civil rights for all. If they apply to one, they apply to all. If they do not apply to one, they do not apply to any. With very, very limited exceptions, such as people convicted for felonies. At this point in time, because of the pressure of the superstition industry, we have made a determination in this country that same-sex couples are limited in their rights the same way that a convicted murderer is, or a convicted thief, or a convicted burglar, or a convicted arsonist. And that in its own right is a civil wrong, because that's almost state-sponsored libel. So that's that issue for the evening. 22 past the hour. You're welcome to chime in on this if you want to. 304-658-5453 is the number. 877-443-2366 is the toll-free number. And just to let you know what's on tap for this evening, coming up right out of the second hour, we'll be having a conversation with David Swanson from After Downing Street. He will talk about the sit-in in John Conyers' office yesterday, and we will discuss impeachment a little bit. So, that's what's coming up. And a whole lot of audio, a great deal of audio, from today's Gonzo Gonzalez hearings. Jump on the lines. I want to know what you've got to say. I want to know what you're thinking. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
If you missed Strictly Confidential last week, you missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs name their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed lesbian Bible study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible. Thou shalt not lie with a man, so I don't, and so what's up with that?
You missed Kiss and Tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed The Pursuit of Happiness.
Are you attached, Mom?
Well, see, now this is Strictly Confidential, isn't it? Stand by
your man. Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to. Stand by.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. Oh, by the way, the contact email information that we gave out during our debut is not in effect. So, to request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
A half minutes past the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On. And with regard to the debate last night, which is, you know, I've seen a few of them now, and to me, it's same crap, different day. Last night's wrestling gimmick, instead of having the steel cage Texas chainsaw death match, they had YouTube questions. Woohoo! I ain't impressed. But there were some interesting moments, like, in particular, a freak. And I watched this a couple of times, and I'm not sure yet whether this is for real, or if it was a setup, or if it was a bit. You know, there were other bits. There were Bubba's, and a talking snowman about global warming. But then a guy, they show a clip of a guy who is on screen, whose name apparently was Jared Townsend from Clio, Michigan. And he said to all the candidates, "Tell me your position on gun control, as myself and other Americans really want to know if our babies are safe." Then he holds up an assault rifle and he says, "This is my baby, purchased under the 1994 gun ban. Please tell me your views. Thank you." "This is my... we want to know if our babies are safe." And, well, you know, we live in a time when parody walks a line so thin and so tight next to reality that it's practically impossible sometimes to tell the difference between the two. There were only two answers to that particular question coming from Bill Richardson and Senator Joseph Biden. But if it was parody, it was good parody, because it points out what the candidates for president can expect from the right-wing filth machine. "They're out to get our guns. They're going to take away our right to defend ourselves and defend ourselves against the government." We get the idea. You know, Ted Nugent lives in Michigan, too. I'm surprised this guy didn't show up with a loincloth in his assault rifle. "Myself and other Americans really want to know if our babies are safe." That went through me like an ice pick, because a lot of Americans, myself and my lovely wife included, would like to know if our babies are safe, and our babies are made of flesh and blood, bone and sinew. And they're very real and very important to us. And just raising a child in the current era, although raising a child in any other era was never easy either, is difficult enough without people like Jared Townsend of Clio, Michigan out there wondering whether or not his baby... "This is my rifle, this is my gun." Wondering if his baby, made of blued steel and polished wood, is safe. Oh, Lordy. Politics and election years really do bring out the worst in people. Why is it? Does the media help that happen? The worst in people, that is? I don't know why they decided to air that. It shouldn't have been. Biden said, "Tell you what, if that's his baby, he needs help. I think he just made an admission against self-interest." That's a big joke in the lawyer crowd. "Ho, ho, ho," all the lawyers said. "Ha, dang, that's funny. I don't care who you are, that's funny." Well, only if you're a lawyer. "I don't know that he's mentally qualified to own that gun. I'm being serious. Look, just like me, we go around talking about people who own guns. I'm the guy who originally wrote the assault weapons ban that became law. Look, we should be working with law enforcement right now to make sure that we protect people against people who aren't capable of knowing what to do with a gun because they're either mentally imbalanced and or because they have a criminal record." And then Biden simply says, "I hope he doesn't come looking for me." I do too, Joe. I do too. But don't worry, Joe. Even if he doesn't come looking for you, there are millions of other crazed NRA members who would. I tell you from time to time about the right-wing interview pitches that I get. I got one the other day from Gun Owners of America. Gun Owners of America, according to this interview pitch, they'd like for me to have the president of Gun Owners of America on the program. Because he wants to explain to America that the hush-rush bill, that fairness doctrine bill, that fairness doctrine is an assault on the Second Amendment. Because if it wasn't for Rush, we couldn't explain to nobody how good we are for owning our guns. Morons. Stupid fools. Oh, yeah. I've got guns because I fear my government. The government's going to come at you with a weapon that fires something on the order of maybe, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 rounds a minute. Maybe 15 rounds a second. I don't know. I don't know the specs on that. They'll come at you with guns that have dual mud flaps, for Christ's sakes. Four-barrel carbs. Whatever. Our government is becoming a dictatorial nightmare, and all these gun owners out there, I'm waiting for when the government becomes a dictatorship, and then we'll rise up! Rise this, gun owners. What a load of crap that was. What a load of unmitigated garbage. And by the way, something else happened today. Just throw it out there for your consideration. America, the working poor, got a raise today. That's right. For the first time in 10 years today, the minimum wage went up. From $5.15 an hour to 6 1/4. Don't spend it all in one place, America. Let's see if you. Boy, I tell you what, that's an extra gallon of milk for every 3 hours you work for your family, working America. That $1.10 raise. Wait a minute, $3.30. No, that won't quite buy a gallon of milk. Now, in last night's debate, crazy old Mike Gravel did say that we need to stop talking about minimum wages and start talking about living wages, because one of the questions that was put out there was, would any of you people be president for minimum wage? Mike Gravel was the first person. He said, sure. I'll do it for minimum wage and I'll throw a rock in a lake. And Chris Dodd said, I've got kids in college. I don't think I could afford to work for minimum wage. Well, thanks for playing, Chris. And Hillary and John Edwards said, sure. And Obama scored some points when he said that, sure, he'd do it for minimum wage because everybody up on that dais was pretty daggum well off. And they could all afford to. Gravel, to be honest, I'm still convinced that he is a plant. But Gravel did get it right. We're not going to make any progress until we stop talking about minimum wages and minimum standards and start talking about living wages and acceptable standards. And frankly, I have no tolerance or patience for the right-wingers. That's just income redistribution. Because frankly, I've had all the income redistribution I can stand. And it's a kind of income redistribution that's utterly obscene. It's filthy. It's vile. It's putrescent. It's corrupt. The idea that we will have income redistribution as we have had over low these last long many 7 years. Income redistribution upwards toward the top 0.1% of wealth holders in America. And it's having an effect. It is most assuredly having effect. That income redistribution has wound up with, for the anti-immigration people, it's wound up creating situations where American citizens can't afford to take jobs because they don't live 20 to a room. So, yeah, we have to, we do, we've got to stop talking about a minimum wage and start talking about a living wage. Now, we hear a lot about veto-proof majorities and how we need a veto-proof majority in 2008, but there's going to be a Democratic president, and that's not really an issue. What we do need is a nice, strong majority that can enact real, meaningful legislation. What would happen, for instance, if every worker at every Rippy Mart in America had an opportunity to join, say, the International Food and Commercial Workers Union, or perhaps the SEIU, and could demand a meaningful wage and benefits and the ability to go to the doctor when they were sick without being utterly destroyed financially? What would happen if those people could do that? Oh my God, your package of bubble yum might go up 0.1716% of a penny. And we can't have that now, can we? Actually, overall cost would probably drop noticeably so, because a lot of the attendant problems, constantly having to retrain new staff, having to hire and hire and hire because you pay so little money that it's a revolving door. But the Employees Free Choice Act. But the Employees Free Choice Act is not going to happen until such time as we've got enough numbers to utterly make the Republicans irrelevant. And that's not a veto-proof majority. That's a filibuster-proof majority. That's a majority in the United States Senate of 61 members. Once we've got 61 members, 61 real Democrats in the Senate, then we can start talking about getting something done. Build on the majority in the House, build a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate, and hopefully have a Democrat in the office of president who will be willing to work toward things like living wages. And then we can see what will happen. Then we can see if we can turn some of this around. Of course, here's what Howard Dean said. He said, because Democrats kept their promise, America's working families will receive a long overdue pay raise today. Democrats believe that if you work hard and play by the rules, you should be able to earn a decent living in our country. Republicans blocked Democratic efforts to increase the minimum wage for 10 long years, but today all Americans win. This milestone only reminds us that there is much more work to be done to help all Americans achieve a better life for themselves and for their families. I would honestly like to have heard Chairman Dean say what is in fact the truth. That we will not reach our potential as Americans until all Americans have a real shot at a living wage. Until we stop talking about the minimum that Americans can expect and start talking about what is acceptable, morally responsible for Americans to expect. Democrats believe that if you work hard and play by the rules, you should be able to earn a decent living in our country. Well, there's an occupant of the White House who has never worked hard in his life, who plays not by the rules, but by his own whim, only by his own whim, And he has gotten ahead in the world, shall we say. For the most part, in the last year or so, he's gotten ahead mainly because we have continued to permit him to get ahead. And that's where the conversation that's going to take place at about 5 after the hour, next hour, comes in. We must continue to make impeachment an issue. The idea that David Swanson, Reverend Yearwood, Cindy Sheehan, and about 25 or 30 others, 47 folks, were jailed yesterday for having the temerity to demand that an elected representative actually honor the Constitution is repugnant to me. I have just been corrected. The minimum wage only went up 70 cents today. 585. In the year 2007, we're still 15 cents away from $6 an hour. Jesus and his brother Harry. That's about sickening. You know, it is. It just is. I guess that makes me some sort of commie pinko for thinking that, you know, somebody who's 35 years old deserves more than $5. There is, look, okay, let's just say this for what it is. There is not a job in America, from swabbing toilets to picking lettuce to being a clerk at the Rippy Mart and distributing squishies, there is not a job in America that is worth less than $6 an hour. Let me take it another step for you. There's not a job in America that's worth less than $7 an hour. There is not a job in America that's worth less than $8 an hour. There is not a job in America worth less than $9 an hour. Any person working for a living in this country should be getting at least $15 an hour, probably $20. Because after all, we're constantly told how important it is. You know, you got to get out. Hey, look, you know, look at the welfare laws. You're getting welfare. You got to get out there and work. You got to work. Never mind the woman, the mother, whose good for nothing husband ran off, and she's trying to raise two or three kids that he bolted on after they were born. Honey, you got to get out there and work, because work's good for you. Work gives you a sense of purpose. Arbeit macht frei, honey. Well, if work is so good and work has such purpose, and work gives so much meaning in life, then why not pay commensurate with the meaning that it bestows? Think of a job, any job. The guy that changes your oil over at the Jiffy Lube. Why shouldn't that guy, who does that day in and day out and shows up for work, rain or shine, and stands down in that pit and gets that carcinogenic goo splattered all over him, hot, and scrubs and scrubs and scrubs when he gets home but still can't get all the grease off, whose clothes, no matter how many times they go through the washer, perpetually smell of petroleum, why shouldn't that man have a decent retirement? Why shouldn't he be able to go to the doctor when he's sick? If he gets sick, why shouldn't his job be protected? Instead of finding out when he gets well that some, pimply-faced 19-year-old is now down in the oil pit. Why shouldn't that man make $15 an hour for being at your beck and call? Why shouldn't he? How about the guy that picks up your trash? You ever had to wait a couple of days for the and like a big party or something, and get together, whatever, and you had more than your usual fair share of garbage, and you had to wait till the next time it was picked up, and it started to get a little stank? That guy gets real valuable in a real hurry. And no, not everywhere does that man, that woman, have a real meaningful wage. Why shouldn't they? That person keeps your life from being filthy and the bottle flies from buzzing around your food at supper time because the garbage is too close by. Is that guy worth $15 an hour? How about the guy who works out at the great big industrial dairy so that you can have half and half in your coffee or milk the minute you want it? Is that guy worth $15 an hour? Or the coal truck driver who's paid by the ton and not by the mile and not by the hour and therefore has to risk his life and yours on the roads by overloading his truck. What would happen if we paid him a fair and living wage? Now, one of the interesting things out of all of this is that this day will come and go without fanfare. And all the doom and gloom that was predicted by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce will be for naught. Oh, we're going to see people won't be able to hire more workers if the minimum wage goes up. My first part, the people earning the minimum wage are 17-year-old kids taking entry-level positions. Employers will not be able to offer entry-level positions. Shut up! Nothing will be said. No one will ever point out that the right wing is a bunch of damn liars. Nobody will call the president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in a year or 2 years and say, hey, where's the economic disaster you said would come to pass if we put an extra buck on the minimum wage? You moron! Nobody will do that. And so when it comes time for us to start talking about another rise in the minimum wage and another 80 cents of don't spend it all in one place, buster, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce will be able to trot out and say, well, I licked my pencil this morning and I got my paper out and I figured out that America's economy will collapse if we increase the minimum wage to $10 an hour. Oh, really, sir? Well, you're an expert. We have to trust you. I don't get it. I don't get it. But then again, I did catch a little clip today of Carol Costello, I think it was, one of the blithering idiots for CNN, who delivered a special report on debate body language. Debate body language? Yeah, really, debate body language. Well, Wolf, she said, all the men were in dark suits, and they were holding on to the podium. Mrs. Clinton, however, Senator Clinton, wore a pink suit and didn't put her hands on the lectern. She looked much more relaxed. As a liberal gun owner, a progressive gun owner, I try to keep my firearms locked away for a very good reason. I'd be going through about a computer monitor a day. Oh, bam! Boy, go get me another monitor and another Elvis gun. It's going to be a long one. Yeah, Agnes?
But, Bob, Hillary looked very vibrant in pink. She was so relaxed, so beautiful. And the men were intimidated. They were very upset, their hands on the podium.
They were hanging onto the podium for dear life.
Only Barack Obama was the one looking away and seemed at ease in the
And John Edwards was nervous because he put his hands in his pockets. See,
very adamant.
John Edwards can't. I mean, I called him for what he deserved to be called on. Carol Costello called him for putting his hands in his pocket. Well, you know, we contacted a body language expert who said that shows he was ill at ease and he uses large gestures. I don't know what the answer to this is. What would happen if all the Democratic male candidates came out in pink suits and Hillary wore black? Well, obviously, Wolf, she wore black because she wanted to show that she's powerful. And my, oh my, didn't all the male candidates look stupid in pink? This is so, so contrary to everything that our framers had in mind. And they, by the way, could wear more than one color. They didn't have to wear a black suit. You ever seen some of the colors of that outlandish 18th century crap they wore? Then again, they wore wigs, too. And the framers of our Constitution, many of them were known to consume something on the order of a gallon of wine a day, so that explains a lot. Then there was, you know, Dr. Titchener's laudanum of excellence. You know, apart from the fact that there were plague outbreaks and smallpox outbreaks and no running water and no indoor plumbing and there was a life of the mind, though, wasn't there, when this nation came into being? The minute it came into being, as is often the case, the minute that the generation that produces the revolution passes on, they become deified. And the people who then hold power start using the legacy, so-called, of the founders and framers to perpetuate their own power. So instead of Jefferson in a wig and a tri-cornered hat, you wind up with Martin Van Buren in an altogether more stodgy suit, and then you wind up with Abraham Lincoln and stovepipe hats, and everybody looks like a Puritan. But, you know, it's nice to know that in 2007, they are in the mainstream media, more concerned with Hillary Clinton's pink suit. Jesus. Maybe next time she can wear one that's rainbow patterned. Or, I don't know, let's see. Hey, here's one. Maybe Mike Gravel can come out in a Zippy the Pinhead clown suit. That would work. All right, that's enough. It's news time. We'll take a break. We'll come back after the news with a conversation with David Swanson to talk a little bit of impeachment. This is America's Liberal Voice. This is The Horn. And I'm Bob.
Lives in the sun. This is the Quality News Network. The Taliban has extended the demand deadline for the release of 23 Koreans taken hostage in Afghanistan last week. The militants insist Taliban prisoners be released and South Korea pull its troops out of the country. The Taliban have drawn protests from Afghans who say their actions are, quote, un-Islamic. Officials remain optimistic that a diplomatic solution will be reached. In Baghdad, top diplomats from U.S. and Iran met today to discuss the deteriorating security situation in Iraq. It is the second diplomatic meeting between the two countries in more than 30 years. The Pentagon says at least 75 Taliban were killed today in three clashes in southern Afghanistan. No casualties were reported by coalition or Afghan forces. Also in Afghanistan, six NATO soldiers, four of them Americans, were killed in combat Sunday and Monday. U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez was on Capitol Hill again today to answer to a Senate Judiciary Committee. Gonzalez denied allegations that he and former Chief of Staff Andy Card pressured a hospitalized Attorney General John Ashcroft into approving the president's domestic wiretapping program. In San Francisco, a federal lawsuit has been filed on behalf of the U.S. soldiers wounded in Iraq, accusing the Veterans Administration of failing to provide adequate mental health care and disability pay. Attorneys filing the suit say they seek to represent as many as 800,000 American troops at risk of suffering from post-traumatic stress. Five nurses and a doctor imprisoned for more than 8 years in Libya were released last night and flown home to Bulgaria, where they were given an immediate pardon by the Bulgarian president. The medics were accused of deliberately infecting children with AIDS, a charge they have consistently denied. Same-sex couples in Washington state began registering as domestic partners yesterday as a new couples law went into effect. The law does not provide heterosexuals with the same right, homosexuals with the same rights as heterosexual married couples or those living in states that permit civil unions. In Texas, a former U.S. Army Reserve officer will be sentenced to prison for bribery and money laundering following his admission he took hundreds of thousands of dollars from a private contractor in Iraq. The governor of Illinois has signed legislation into law banning smoking in public places. Smokers who get caught lighting up may be fined $250. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news next.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking. I just wonder why you think it's important to bank in a local bank.
Because it's here in our community, in our area, and we tend to find that they have the best service for us. They are always there when we need them.
Do you like the idea that it's a local bank with big bank services and benefits?
You get all the benefits of the big banks, but you walk in, people know who you are.
Yeah. Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Absolutely. They have the resources, but, of course, the personal touch of a local bank.
I am here once a week, yes.
Taking money out.
Taking money out and putting it in and taking it out.
So you're doing a lot of banking in here.
I carry it in wheelbarrow.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
A study released today shows that lowering your cholesterol too much may increase your risk of cancer. Researchers found that patients who take statin drugs to lower cholesterol had a higher risk of cancer. The study did not show, however, that the statin drugs themselves are cause for concern. The FDA says the recent recall of 80 brands of canned meat products may involve millions of cans still on store shelves. Investigators say 16 out of 17 cans tested contain the bacterium that causes botulism. Natural Balance dog food has also been recalled. New York City's health department says blood tests show one out of four city dwellers have elevated levels of mercury. Officials say the mineral is likely tied to consumption of fish. Those who typically eat more fish, Asians, and wealthier residents, have the highest level of mercury. Netflix posted a 50% increase in quarterly net income, but also announced a decline in subscribers for the first time in its 8-year history. Yesterday, the DVD rental company said it would reduce its monthly subscription rate by a dollar to compete with its rival, Blockbuster. As of today, U.S. workers making federal minimum wage will see their paychecks rise 70 cents to $5.85 an hour. The Department of Labor estimates about 1.7 million Americans were paid minimum wage last year. Light sweet crude is trading at $73.52 a barrel on Wall Street this hour. The Dow is down 221, the NASDAQ down 51, the S&P 500 down 30. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Reed Kavner.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Five past the hour. We'll be talking with David Swanson from After Downing Street here in a couple of minutes. With that, I mean, just, you know, you probably know the setup, but there were about 47 folks yesterday who pulled a sit-in at Congressman John Conyers' office. They were arrested, and they were briefly jailed, 8 to 9 hours. You know, there's no... An hour in jail is god-awful. I applaud the guts these folks have. Because at 1 hour, 8 hours, a day, 2 days... And to do this in the face of George Bush's executive order that says that protesting can constitute... impeding the Iraq war effort is an act of patriotism similar and on a par with standing up to the to King George III. I'm sorry, I feel that way. So, with that having been said, let's past his prologue. Then we go to David Swanson. David, thank you so much for taking time to join us, and I'm glad you're out of the joint.
My pleasure. Me too.
Now, I'm kind of going to start at the end and work backwards. You've said that yesterday is going to be nothing compared to what's coming in terms of your willingness to protest the failure of the Congress to do its duty by the Constitution and impeach. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, for many months now, there's sort of been two John Conyers out there. There's the guy who keeps saying, I'm for impeachment, I love impeachment, we can fire them, and so forth. And the guy who says, oh, no, I would never be for impeachment, bad idea, we need to wait for the next election. And these guys have existed simultaneously in the same body for many months. And I think yesterday we pretty clearly established which one is actually driving the congressman. And I think that's helpful. I think it helps that people understand that Congressman Conyers is not about to start impeachment next week and then next week and then next week, that we actually have to move him. And there are people I'm hearing from around the country who are energized and want to move into doing things like sit-in after we did it in Washington yesterday. So I'm not sensing as much discouragement from Conyers' position as I am energy to push harder. And so I think we're really going to step it up, pushing Conyers and Pelosi and members of the Judiciary Committee and other Congress members. And I think in the coming weeks, as in every week in the past few years, Bush and Cheney are going to be our biggest allies, because they're going to keep dramatically assaulting our system of government.
Well, let me ask you, David. It was a little bit confusing for me yesterday. I went on the air, and there was this story circulating about how Congressman Conyers said if he can get three more people to sign on to H.R. 333, he'd begin proceedings, yada, 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 yada. Then we go on the air, and about this time last night, I see the release come from you guys that he said, you're just going to have to wait till the next election. Are we being monkeyed with? Are we being abused? Are we being played with? What the heck is going on here?
Well, he did say that in San Diego on Friday. I've watched the video and posted it on afterdowningstreet.org. You can go watch it. He says, if you get three more Congress members from anywhere in the country to come and tell me they're for impeachment, then I can do it. But in the same speech, you see the other John Conyers saying, impeachment's not necessarily such a good idea. We'd have to study it, and there are even retroactive impeachments where we could impeach them after they're out of office. You know, so you get both of him in the same speech. It was the better half that, of course, everybody was shouting about and telling me about until I saw the video. But he's been monkeying with us for years now, literally years now. I mean, I think
in 2005, he may have had some thought that he might actually get to impeachment. But, you know, for more than a year now, he's been decidedly on board with Nancy Pelosi and the decision not to move impeachment, and yet he's been playing with it.
See, I get all flummoxed when I start talking about impeachment because it seems like a no-brainer to me, David. Is this the machination of a cynical politician? Is this politics driven by fear? Is it coming from Congressman Conyers because he somehow thinks that it's letting Bush and Cheney go on in their mad way is somehow a political lever for them? Where does this mindset come from?
Well, certainly all of the above, in a way. The fear that the congressman expressed in meeting with our delegation yesterday was fear of Fox News.
Huh?
Fear that if he moved on impeachment, and especially if it didn't succeed, if the Democrats weren't all with him, that he would be denounced on Fox News as partisan or something almost that bad. And so this is really an incredible state to have arrived at, I think, where a Democratic chairman of the Judiciary Committee in our Congress is basing his decision on whether a Republican cable television station is going to agree with him or not. I mean, this is outrageous. But the other factors you suggested are true as well. There's a great deal of cynicism here. He's been playing with us, and he's not really intending to move on impeachment. And the reasoning behind that, at least on the part of the leadership in the Democratic Party in the House, is that the best way to win the elections in the end of 08, which is the only thing that matters in the world, is to not move on impeachment. I think that's morally disgusting, and I think it's strategically probably very, very wrong. I think that history shows very clearly, and recent history, when they went after Nixon, they won the biggest victories. When they let Reagan go, they lost. They are less popular than Bush. They're approaching Cheney territory. And it's because they're unwilling to act. And we've now reached a point, subpoenas are rejected, former staff members are ordered to disobey subpoenas, the Justice Department is instructed not to enforce contempt citations, there's nothing left but impeachment. And if they spend the next year and a half sending more subpoenas and whining about it, they're not going to elect Congress members, much less the new emperor that they have their hearts set on.
One of the things that bothers me in the middle of the night, David, is the fact that, you know, we impeached, not we, not you, not me.
Tom DeLay, Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, that crowd. Impeached Bill Clinton for, and I'm trying to be charitable here, usually we do shorthand and we say they impeached him for, consensual sex. But they say, no, he committed perjury, he lied under oath, yada, yada, yada. Okay, to be charitable, they impeached him for lying about consensual sex. And that, they, you know, they're the ones who established the de minimis benchmark standard then for modern impeachment, lying about consensual sex. Does the Democratic Congress not understand, do you think, David, that to let all of these things go with this president establishes another benchmark of stuff we will tolerate, so that as much as we think that George Bush is a monster, we are setting ourselves up by letting him off the hook, and Cheney as well, we're setting ourselves up for somebody that's going to make him look like a piker?
I don't know to what extent they grasp that. I think some of them clearly do and don't sufficiently care. They only care about what happens in the elections in November of 2008. And they, aside from putting too much faith in the honesty and accuracy of those elections, given their refusal to clean up our election system, they are misguided in their approach to how to win those elections. But I think It would be very hard, I think, to find a Congress member who doesn't understand that lying us into a war is worse than lying us, you know, than lying about consensual sex. And really, from a lot of Republicans as well as virtually every Democrat, you don't hear any arguments from them in lobby visits that there have not been impeachable offenses, that there have not been the most severe impeachable offenses. I mean, you have people like Senator Russ Feingold out there repeatedly arguing that there have been the worst impeachable offenses and we should not impeach anyone. And so they're putting other concerns ahead of the tool of impeachment, which the people who put this country together so brilliantly 230 years ago thought was essential to holding it together.
Well, if that is the case, then are you spinning your wheels when you do these sit-ins? If dynamite, and please, Agent Fred, you know, Agent Fred from the NSA always listens to you.
No, I know him.
Agent Fred, we're not talking about anybody getting dynamited, but if dynamite itself would not move these people toward impeachment, why are you doing what you're doing?
Well, we have no, if we could know for a fact that there was no way to get to impeachment, we wouldn't work for it. But there's no way to know that. And it was not that many months before Nixon got on the helicopter that there was declared to be no way to get to impeachment for Nixon. It was crazy. It was outrageous. It was off the table. I mean, every movement worth anything goes up against the lie that it's impossible. Now, there's no way to guarantee that we will succeed. But when it's this significant, what choice do we have but to push for it, because we know that if we don't try, that the Congress won't do anything. And we know that if that is the result, we will have established that there is no rule of law for presidents and vice presidents in this country, and that will mean serious disaster.
Is there, do you think, is there a popular groundswell? Is there anything, if you can see it out there, David, is there anything that would make it not only on the table but a lead pipe cinch? You know, whether that's, you know, a million people surrounding the Capitol demanding it, or, you know, George Bush going absolutely sprayed roach crazy and gunning down people in the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue. Is there anything out there, do you think, that would make it unavoidable?
Well, the popular groundswell is hard to point to with any sort of pseudo-scientific accuracy, given that there's only ever been in the history of the universe one poll ever done on whether Americans want to impeach Dick Cheney. And that's who we're focused on. That's who we're starting with. And it's 54% yes, 40% no, which is incredible. And it's incredible that there are no more polls done to see if that was right. And with Bush, you know, it's the majority or close to it and has been for a year and a half. But there is a swelling of interest in Washington, in the media, in activist groups. There are organizations and powerful people on board with impeachment in recent weeks who weren't before. And so it looks like a popular groundswell. Whether it is in terms of grassroots numbers is impossible to say. What could break through and make it happen for sure? I mean, one thing obviously would be if we acted like people in other countries would act, and millions of us went to Washington, D.C. and camped in the streets and shut the place down for a couple weeks. That, you know, that's unimaginable with Americans. You'd have to turn off their TVs somehow first. The other thing that might do it is what Cindy Sheehan launched yesterday, and that is campaigns to defeat key Congress members in the next election. You know, if Cindy could establish a really powerful, threatening campaign operation in San Francisco, that could shake up Nancy Pelosi. That's one of the things she actually cares about, is whether she gets elected again. And we have some challengers running in Democratic primaries who have already shaken up incumbent Congress members who've signed on for impeachment because they don't want to lose the primary in 08. I really think, you know, it's not that these people are not human and you can't appeal to them in other ways, But one of the best tools we've got is electoral threat.
Well, I hope it can I hope it can have some impact. You know, there's no such thing, basically, for all intents and purposes, there's no meaningful Republican Party in Nancy Pelosi's district in California. So, you know, I guess if Cindy Sheehan runs an independent campaign all the way into November, then she would be the second choice, or the other choice. I don't mean second choice, but the other choice in a two-person race, because I don't think there's any risk of her splitting the ticket and
right,
putting a Republican in office out there. We were up there for Camp Democracy a little more than a year ago, and you know, there were a lot of committed people there, and there were a lot of people who were passionate about this issue. But you know, you mentioned a minute ago you'd have to get Americans away from their television sets. What are you doing? As a progressive and a liberal, I see your activist alerts, I see your flashes, I see your the stuff from after Downing Street, and it seems mainstream to me because I'm so constantly acquainted with it. How do we frame this message? How do we build it in such a way as to get it through to the guy with the six pack watching the NBA game? Baseball game.
Well, the small-scale way to do it is to go out around your town and talk to people. Wear the shirt, hand out the flyers, start conversations. The easier way to do it is to get in the so-called mainstream media outlets with it. And one way to do that is to have events that have multiple points of view, that are debates or discussions. Last Friday, Cindy Sheehan's group that were marching and driving from Texas to New York came through my town in the middle of Virginia in Charlottesville, and we'd had Cindy here before to give a lecture to the converted in a hall, and we had hundreds of people come, but we didn't have that many people who didn't already get it, and we didn't have that much media attention. This time we had an outdoor rally, and the pro-death crowd, the Chicken Hawks, the Republicans, decided to have a counter rally. And so all the TV stations and newspapers hyped this big conflict in the days and weeks leading up to the rally. And it brought people out, and when they stopped shouting at each other, there was a lot of conversations and even conversions that went on. I think that's needed. And to the extent that the media is finally opening up and we're seeing pro-impeachment columns and editorials, that debate and discussion may get underway.
I certainly hope it does, David. You mentioned, the T-shirts, the flyers, things like that. You maintain a resource there at After Downing Street for that kind of thing, don't you?
Oh, yeah. If you go to afterdowningstreet.org, you'll see T-shirts you can get and all sorts of materials to reach out to people and to hold events and signs and bumper stickers and so on, and they're really effective, and you get almost no negative comments ever, and you meet a lot of surprising new friends if you have something on you that says impeachment.
Just a couple other things in regard to the impeachment issue itself. Obviously H.R. 333 is about Dick Cheney. Is that the focus right now? I mean, has that congealed, or is there any interest in expanding it, given the hearings that happened in the Senate today with Alberto Gonzalez, a push for his impeachment or the impeachment of George Bush himself, or anyone else, or is the primary focus the vice president?
Oh, I think Gonzalez would be excellent, and I think it would be an opening for Pelosi to say she never took it off the table for Gonzalez, and she has to answer to Fox and CNN and the people who run this country. I think it's something that a lot of organizations are open to and Congress members are open to. If they could get up the nerve to impeach Gonzalez, I think the case is fairly easy. I think it could be fairly swift, and I think it could open the door to impeachment. I wouldn't want it to be seen as closing the door on impeaching Cheney or Bush or anyone else, and I think it would be unlikely to. I think much more likely to shut the door would be censure or that sort of nonsense. But I think going for Bush without going for Cheney first or simultaneously is not viable. The American people won't stand for it. There's just this insane, irrational horror of President Cheney, you know, as if he isn't already running the country.
Yeah.
As if the Republicans would ever stand for him being the face of the White House. But that's the political reality on the ground. The American people will not stand for impeaching Bush first. It has to be Cheney, just like it had to be Agnew.
Well, that is absolutely, again, a case of historical precedent. In your article, David, there's a paragraph where you say that John Conyers told you to stop working on justice and start doing politics. I like to think of myself as a relatively intelligent human being, but what in heaven's name does that mean?
Well, I don't know, and this is secondhand. I was not in the room. I was outside the door. Cindy Sheehan, Ray McGovern, and Reverend Yearwood were in the room, and I heard accounts from all three of them, and at great length, and we spent 7 or 8 hours in a jail, but I don't know exactly. But he seemed to be suggesting that we were unsophisticated, unwise, unhip activists, idealists focused on justice, and we should get wise to the ways of politics and the importance of winning elections and how elections can solve everything. And you know, when Cindy Sheehan came out of the meeting, having deemed it a failure and announced to hundreds of people lining the hallway outside Conyers' office that he had said our only recourse was elections, every single person groaned and moaned in unison. This is not what the American people are interested in.
Well, it sounds like that speech that begins, "Well, little lady, you know."
Yes. Yeah.
You don't know how things operate around here. We have to get things done, and we can't just. It's an assault on any sort of idealism based on the founding principles of this country, isn't it?
I agree. But, you know, John Conyers has been in Congress for going on 40 years. He's been a leader. He's been a friend of poor people's movements, of the labor movement, of the rights of the underprivileged. He stood up to the powerful. I doubt very much he's ever been protested in the way he was yesterday. And it's probably been years since anyone spoke to him as directly and in as challenging a way as people did in that meeting yesterday. And, you know, he's used to being the authority and being respected, and anything to the left of him is by definition outrageous and unacceptable. And so to have people in there quoting Martin Luther King back at him when he quoted him at them, I think came as something of a disturbing jolt for the congressman.
Do you think that where Congressman Conyers is concerned, David, that this is an issue of him doing Nancy Pelosi's bidding in order to maintain a certain access to power that he presently has? Or is this a matter of his own conscience telling him that impeachment at this point is wrong?
Well, he has said before that she's a big factor. He's never said that she was the entire thing. Yesterday he said she was not a factor, that he agrees with her, and I think at least to some extent he must. And again, what he agrees with her on is the idea that you don't have the votes already, and so you shouldn't push it, and the best way to win the election, which is the important thing, is to keep the occupation going and keep Bush and Cheney around. Again, I think that's morally disgusting. While people are dying, while people are being kidnapped and tortured and murdered, and he knows it, and he's documented it, and I think it's politically misguided. I think they are going to lose. I think our choices here are impeachment and victories for the Democrats and those who push it, or no impeachment and victories for Republicans. I think those are our reasonable choices at this point.
Well, at this point, the Democrats are making themselves look ineffective, aren't they? I don't know where all these moderates and all these independents are, these people who supposedly drive the electoral process, David. But if you're one of those people and you're looking at the Republicans versus the Democrats, when the Republicans had a majority in the Congress, even if what they were doing was heinous, evil, and utterly, undeniably wrong, they were doing it, and they were doing it proactively, and they would not brook any dissent. They threatened to slap Harry Reid around treat Harry Reid like the Harlem Globetrotters treated the Washington Generals, I guess. And meantime, so the Democrats get power, and all of a sudden it's like we have to have that this is suddenly a cocktail party instead of a bare-knuckled political brawl, and we have to make nicey with each other.
Well, there was one exception, in a way, when Nancy Pelosi really wanted to pass a bill to fund this occupation of Iraq, she bribed and cajoled and threatened and beat up her colleagues until she got the Democrats to come very, very close to voting as a unanimous block in favor of that bill. So we know it can be done, and that was with a bill that many Democrats seriously oppose. It took incredible pressure and threats to get them to vote for that thing, and they got heat for it from their constituents. Impeachment would be easier if Nancy Pelosi tried to get the votes. So to have Congressman Conyers say at this point, well, we don't have the votes, you know, well, sure, you don't have them until you try to get them, but you've got 76% of Democrats for impeaching Dick Cheney, and the minute John Conyers starts impeachment proceedings, I guarantee it's 86%.
Does he honestly think that he couldn't get 333 out of judiciary?
I doubt very much. They have a strong Democratic majority, even with Congressman Meehan having retired, and the Democrats will all go along with him. You already have three members of the Judiciary Committee bucking him by having signed on to H. Res. 333. If he were to promote it, you would have all the Democrats, maybe some Republicans. It would certainly get out of Judiciary Committee. I think he has doubts about whether it would pass the full House, but I think
wait, David. It's not like this thing has to pass the House by a two-thirds majority or a so-called supermajority.
No.
No, this is a 50% plus .00001 majority.
Yes.
The simplest of majorities. He's under the impression that if you sat there and created a laundry list, and that, you know, not necessarily Congressman Kucinich's two counts, you know, this is subject to amendment, but to really put together a laundry list of everything that Dick Cheney has done that has violated the law, he thinks that there are enough mugwump Democrats that they would vote to keep this man in office.
Well, I think the more articles of impeachment, the more abuses you pile in, the more difficult it is to round up Congress members, because you put in some one thing that they object to because of some corporate sponsorship. And I think that the charges in H.R.S. 333 are some of the most difficult to get various Congress members on because they love war so much. But I think if you use charges related to outing a CIA officer, refusing to comply with subpoenas, promoting the use of torture, engaging in illegal spying, abuses of power, refusing to turn over information. I think if you tried, you could get all of the Democrats and some of the Republicans. I think you could be quite certain of getting impeachment of Dick Cheney out of the House. And then he is 100% impeached. That then you have the trial in the Senate, and if he's acquitted, you have at the very least guaranteed huge Democratic victories in the election, identified which senators need to be voted out because they defended the crimes of Dick Cheney, and you've established at least to a serious degree that it's not acceptable to take the actions that Dick Cheney has taken.
This all seems so plain and so simple to me, David, and you make it that way, and I appreciate it. But one of the other things that made impeachment something that was fairly easy to get your mind around came out of John Conyers' office itself. And that was, you know, that was the brief that was put together. Those staffers are still on that wrote that are still on his staff, are they not?
Yes, and we're in the meeting yesterday.
Do you have any sense, or have you been told where these people are on it? I mean, were they just spinning their wheels? Was this something to help them draw their breath and their pay? Why generate something like that? If the issue was this just a campaign, was it a campaign document? Because after all, it did come out before the 06 elections.
Well, his report originally came out Christmas of 05. He, some months later, updated it to add in the illegal spying programs and some other additions. It's an excellent report. It's an excellent book, Constitution in Crisis. You can go to afterdowningstreet.org/Constitution in Crisis and read it for free, or you can go to a bookstore and buy it. He literally has written the book laying out the felonies committed by Bush and Cheney and the grounds for impeachment. And, you know, it's not complete. It would be impossible. A book would be 10 feet thick to get a complete list, but it's ideal, and it shows that this impeachment could take a day or two. It wouldn't have to take 2 months. It wouldn't have to take 3 months. This could take a day or two because the evidence is already known. It's simply a question of doing it. Now, I don't know in 05 when they were writing this thing if they thought perhaps we might get to impeachment under a Republican majority, or maybe under a future Democratic majority at that point we might get to impeachment. It was in spring of 06 that Nancy Pelosi ordered impeachment off the table, and in the summer of 06 that John Conyers went along with that. Up to that point, did he think we might get there? I don't know, but I know that all the efforts he made in 05 and early 06 to push us in that direction dramatically helped the Democrats win in 06, and now the voters are not getting anything for it.
Well, it smells a little like a bait and switch, to be honest. It feels like one.
And you know what looks even more is if you look at the Senate Intelligence Committee, where the Democrats griped for years, when will we get that report? You agreed to give us that report on how we were lied into the war. Here we are 7 months into Democratic majority with Senator Rockefeller, no longer the ranking member, but the chairman, and there's no report, there's no hearing, there's no talk of it.
Yeah, because Pat Roberts, who was the chairman previously, seemed like he was dragging his feet. He did doing everything in his power not to put the report out. Where that's my senator, Senator Rockefeller, because you know the horn is headquartered in West Virginia. Has he given any indication? Has he said anything about it? Did I miss something here?
He has not. I mean, the new chair in the House Intelligence Committee, Congressman Reyes, immediately announced he would have nothing to do with any investigations of the war. He would leave it to Rockefeller, which is disgraceful. Rockefeller has not produced anything. He produced one report that, you know, involved no hearings, no new information. It didn't go into the question of how we were misled into this war. And it's not just the congressman that Senator Roberts was refusing to put that out, refused to put it out before the election, and then after the election, refused to do it because the election was passed. You know, and Rockefeller was publicly demanding it and complaining and writing letter after letter. And now where is he?
I have no answer, it's possible that some stuff gets by me from time to time, David, but I think I would have seen something like that if he'd come out and castigated the committee for not. But after all, it's his committee now, and it's up to him.
He's not doing it. And if he had done it, they would not have put out that national intelligence estimate last week that was a review of the same blatant sort of lies and nonsense that took us into Iraq. They would have been given a warning that they had to shape up a little bit.
Okay, here's our little moment of paranoia on the program, David. I'm getting a question. You know, we run a chat room here with the network, and there's a lot of people in there, and they send questions to me, that kind of thing. Who has gotten to people like Rockefeller? Who's gotten to Conyers? Is this a matter of somebody taking the folder with the pictures with the girl and the chandelier and saying, you know, this is what comes out if you do this? Or is it something far more prosaic and politically disgusting?
Well, anything is possible, you know, and it's not paranoia to realize that something's possible. You know, and I certainly think that the theory that when the White House controlled the Senate office building following the anthrax attack, anything could have been seized that might have been used to blackmail anyone. But not knowing that, you have to ask, well, is that explanation necessary? And I don't think it is. You know, I think a part of the explanation can easily be that so many Democratic senators were themselves involved in pushing this bogus information and driving this nation into a war. If you look at the speeches that Senator Edwards and Senator Clinton, who are both running for president, which is all the Democrats care about, is who is the next emperor, the speeches they made before voting for that authorization to use force, they rehearsed all the lies, you know, all the weapons, all the ties to terrorism. And so I think the Democratic leadership doesn't necessarily want to dig into all of that right now.
You're leading me to a very spooky and very scary, very dark place, David, and that is, hypothetically, if that had been, and I know it's kind of hard to fathom, but I guess it's conceivable, if in October of 2002 it had been Al Gore in Cincinnati talking about, we know he has weapons of mass destruction, are you saying that for purely partisan political reasons, Democrats would have gone, oh shucks, yeah, let's go bomb the snot out of him, woo-hoo-hoo, let's have a war? I mean, is that it?
Well, certainly there would have been more Democrats than there were, as it was, with Bush and Cheney making those blatant lies, those obvious lies to build a case for war. You still had a third of the Democrats in the House and half the Democrats in the Senate go along with it, and some of them quite aggressively, including the former running mate of Al Gore, Joe Lieberman. And I think if Al Gore had been given the White House in 2000, as he deserved, having won the election in every sense of the word, and if he had done a very, very good job, and if he had gotten sick and died, or being especially paranoid if he had been killed, we might be in Iran by now, because Lieberman would have been president. And there are Democrats as far out there as any Republican, and Joe Lieberman is one of them.
Although, you know, technically an independent, yeah.
Yes, okay.
Right.
Formerly a Democrat.
Right, but and that's, you know, I guess that's the stuff that you get and I get and so many people get, David, is what do we have to do to make people realize that letting them get away with Iraq, letting them get away with habeas corpus abuses, letting them get away with domestic spying, letting them get away with everything they've gotten away with, again, only makes it more likely that something more, you know, something more wicked this way comes. How long till the false flag event, or whatever you want to call it, that leads us into a war with Iran? You know, what will happen in America if we see the flaming wreckage of the USS Enterprise?
This is one of the frightening scenarios: an attack on Iran, an attack on this country by who knows who. There are any number of scenarios that will result in absolute catastrophe if we have not held these people accountable. And just, this is the beautiful thing about HRS 333, trying to impeach them for threatening an aggressive war on Iran, even before you get to a completed impeachment, absolutely helps forestall that aggressive war on Iran. But sitting back and doing nothing, the majority of Americans get it. They understand but they don't understand that it's possible for them to change anything. They believe they're completely powerless. Their televisions tell them every day that they're completely powerless. They aren't used to doing anything. They couldn't imagine taking time off work and going and sitting in a street and blocking traffic. That's beneath them. Or if it's not beneath them, they actually can't do it because they're working two jobs and trying to survive. It's not as much a question of educating people, I think, as mobilizing people and giving people the tools and the optimism to think they can actually change it.
Well, with that in mind, and what you're going to be, are you looking for more people to join your protests, to go with Cindy or with Reverend Yearwood or whomever, and confront these people in their offices, in their seats of power?
Absolutely. You know, yesterday we had sit-ins in a number of congressional offices around the country, including Conyers' offices in Detroit and D.C., and we need to do more of that. And you can go to afterdowningstreet.org and get involved. You can also do protests and not risk arrest. You can do demonstrations on the corner. You can have a honk to impeach sign and get the honking going. You can collect signatures on petitions and get your city council to pass a resolution for impeachment. We need more of all of these things, and we especially need intense pressure on John Conyers, Nancy Pelosi, and the members of the House Judiciary Committee.
What about Steny Hoyer?
It would help a lot. It would absolutely help. You know, Larry Johnson, the former CIA analyst, was reporting a week or two ago that Hoyer and Pelosi were not on speaking terms because Hoyer wanted to move on impeaching Cheney and Pelosi didn't.
Well, that's why I asked.
Well, I haven't heard that from anybody other than Larry Johnson, have you?
No.
And that's all I know. I'm inclined to doubt it, and I'm inclined to suspect that he may have heard it from Steny Hoyer's new chief of staff, who is one of these guys who's like Conyers' good half, who's more progressive than his boss, who's sort of like Howard Dean's Joe Trippi, and so you don't know where Hoyer really stands.
I'm just wondering where. I mean, there is no suit of armor ever been made, David, that doesn't have a chink in it somewhere. And I'm wondering where that is. It seems like that everything bounces off Conyers. Nancy Pelosi has just turned her back on the people of America. I'm trying to think of somewhere within the Democratic House leadership that we can get this started. You know, I'm a huge supporter of Dennis Kucinich. I almost came to tears the night of that debate when I think it was Brian Williams from NBC said, everybody in favor of impeaching Cheney, raise your hand, and the only patriot on that stage was Dennis Kucinich. It made me want to weep for my country.
And Mike Gravel had been for impeachment, and he just didn't do it in order to be different from Dennis. And then he announced later that he's for impeachment now.
Right. I'm looking for any. You know, obviously, it seems to me it has to happen in the House. I don't think you can indirectly get some senator to go to the House and say, you know, listen, you know, we'll take care of it over here if you'll just get it to us. If some run of the mill congressman that you would never expect to back impeachment comes along and does it, you know, would that provide the critical weight?
I think a Republican like Ron Paul, who was for impeachment before he decided to run for president, but didn't want to sign on to any bill because it would be with mostly Democrats, would be helpful. Any Republican would be helpful. Ron Paul signed a letter last week with 69 Democrats. They called it a bipartisan letter from 70 Congress members about ending the war. Why can't he do something like that on impeachment? Why can't Walter Jones, who's still repentant over his support for this war, a Republican would help a lot. And Democratic leaders like Steny Hoyer would help a lot. Jan Schakowsky has signed on.
Yeah. What about other committees? I mean, we focused on Conyers because Conyers was the one who seemed to be providing us the most hope. But you know, he's judiciary. But there are other committees that could take jurisdiction of this. Intelligence could take jurisdiction. Given some of the shenanigans that have gone on with war profiteering, appropriations could take an interest in this. Is there any point in trying to work any of those angles?
Well, again, intelligence is Congressman Reyes, who I'm not sure has the aptitude for it. I mean, one of the things about Conyers is it would be great to see him do it. He would do it well. And I don't think we've seen any indication from Reyes that he will challenge Pelosi or has any interest in these issues. Appropriations, if I'm not mistaken, is Congressman Rangel,
mm-hmm.
who does the bidding of Hillary Clinton, who has got to be the prime mover behind Pelosi on this. She doesn't want the word impeachment ever mentioned again in public. She thinks it will remind people of her husband. She wants to get elected by not doing anything, by not being a Republican, by not taking any risks or standing for anything or offending anybody. And so I don't think Rangel is going to step out on this, particularly as, you know, it would be seen as a challenge to his long-term ally in John Conyers. I think that there is a subcommittee of Conyers Committee to which HRES 333 has already been referred, which is the Subcommittee on the Constitution. This is chaired by Jerry Nadler, who represents New York City. And I think he is a possible place to start. He could make something happen in his subcommittee that could drive it to the full committee. But otherwise, I don't know. I mean, every Congress member listens most to their constituents. So everybody listening to this should focus especially on their Congress member, whoever it is.
And just try to build weight for 333 by the sheer weight of co-sponsors.
333 or new articles of impeachment. I think there are other articles that would move faster if some one Congress member would just introduce them.
Now, Dennis Kucinich was the one who introduced 333, David. What about the... he chairs a subcommittee that could arguably claim jurisdiction. Is that something he's unwilling to do because he's in the presidential race, or just it's so far out there it wouldn't be conceivable?
Well, I don't think I'm not sure it would work. I'm not sure it would get out of the subcommittee or the committee. The committee is chaired by Congressman Waxman, who is dead set against impeachment, and it would have a hard time in the full House. In addition, you know, his bill has been referred by the leadership, by the Rules Committee, to a particular committee,
right.
the Judiciary Committee. He could start doing things in his subcommittee, but I think that they very intentionally gave him a subcommittee on domestic issues. So he would need to steer away from the war, I think. But it can't be a one person show.
Certainly not. It just seems to me that what we're looking at here, David, is a situation in which this has very craftily been put together to put a stone wall everywhere that we would attempt to go with this. Is that paranoia, or is that recognizing political reality?
Well, I mean, the real paranoia is to think that maybe the Republicans impeached Clinton knowing that the next Republican who came along had all sorts of impeachable offenses planned, and they wanted to take impeachment out of the Constitution. And that's a lot of what we're up against, is the idea that impeachment means something like it meant with Clinton, where the impeachment was incredibly unpopular. The problem with that way of thinking is that that's Beltway thinking. Outside the Beltway, this impeachment, not even happening, is already incredibly popular. But you know, I don't think the Republicans actually planned that out. I think they actually just hated Bill Clinton with a visceral passion. But,
yeah.
You know, and I think the Democrats are, you know, they're herd animals. They're behaving like herd animals. They're following their leader. Their leader is following their presidential candidate. They're all following their strategists, and we know how they think. And this is how they think. You don't do something that would offend Fox News.
That's the part of the whole story that just made me want to scream. We must not offend Fox News. Lord God. Well, let me ask you, as a way of wrapping all this up, David, and by prologue, I'll tell you, I've said I'll be a Democrat till the day I die. Because the Republican Party is a dead thing. It's, you know, between the religious right and the corporatists, there's no hope of ever salvaging that political party. On the other hand, I've maintained that there is some hope for the Democratic Party as long as if progressives are willing to work hard enough to drag the Democratic Party back toward the center, you know, though it be kicking and screaming, because the center right now is in a place that's so far right that Mussolini would be a little bit nervous about it, I think. Is the nature of our political structure at this point in time such that it's either participate and go along and get along or be marginalized, or do you think you're out there, you've got After Downing Street, you're involved in all of these various and sundry efforts to bring about progressive change. Is this an effort to build something outside the traditional two-party structure, or is this an effort to change one party over time?
Well, I'm inclined to agree with you about the Republicans. I'm not ready to say I'm a Democrat for life, and you know, in Virginia, I don't have to register as any party. But you know, I would love to turn the Democrats into a decent political party. I would also love to build a decent political party from scratch or from the small ones that are started, like the Greens. I suspect that turning the Democrats into a decent party is going to be the easier task. We're going to get there first, but I think that threats from independent candidates and third parties helps in that. And so I'm not opposed to independent candidacies like Cindy Sheehan's or building third parties like the Green Party, which has been out there pushing with us for impeachment. And if we should happen to build an effective Green Party or some other party before we reform the Democrats, so much the better. My prediction would be that we won't, but it will help move the Democrats in the right direction.
Well, I hope that it does. I say lifelong Democrat because, you know, we do have to register party here in West Virginia. And frankly, you know, I can't imagine, I'm hard-headed enough that I want to see change in stuff that I believe in. And so that's why I want to work within the Democratic Party structure. But with all of that in mind, David, let me thank you very, very much for joining us this evening. I hope you know that you're always welcome here. We're really proud of what we've done on the Horn. I'd say we put out more honestly progressive information than just about any other outfit in this country, and that includes Air America and anyone else for that matter. So anytime you want to get a progressive message out, anytime you want to try to inspire people to move, to do something, to get something accomplished, please know that this is a warm and welcoming place for you and your ideas.
I know it and appreciate it, and you're doing great work, and it's exactly what we need.
Well, David, have a great evening. Keep on plugging, and you know, as you build toward impeachment, we'll get the information out there for you whenever possible. I hope more people will go to more offices. You know, we talk about congressional offices. There are there's a congressman's office in Beckley, West Virginia, in Charleston, West Virginia, senator's offices. You know, you can go and hold a sign in front of that place and have as much impact. In other words, you don't have to go to Washington, D.C.
That's right. You might have more impact.
Exactly. Well, have a great evening, David. Thank you for taking so much time and talking about this in so much depth.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Bye now. David Swanson, afterdowningstreet.org.
Tell me somewhere else you're going to get that much depth in a conversation on impeachment. You just heard 55 minutes of impeachment with not a commercial in it, not a PSA. Oh, some people would call it a filibuster. I call it freedom of speech. This is the Head On Radio Network. Fire up the phone lines. Let's see what you think. 304-658-5453 or 877-443-2366. I want to hear from you on the horn. We'll be back.
Quality News Network. The Dow Jones Industrial slid 226 points in its biggest one-day decline since March. We'll have closing numbers for you in business news. On Capitol Hill, U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez answered more questions from Senate Judiciary Committee. Chairman of the committee, Democrat Patrick Leahy, said Gonzalez has lost the confidence of the Congress and the American people. Gonzalez, however, says he will stay and fix the problems. A federal lawsuit filed yesterday in San Francisco against the Veterans Administration seeks to represent as many as 800,000 U.S. troops. The suit says the VA is failing to provide adequate mental health care and disability pay to those returning from Afghanistan and Iraq. The draft plan for military operations in Iraq has U.S. troops there through 2009. General David Petraeus' plan sets a series of goals to reach a sustainable level of security in 2 years. The Pentagon stressed this is only a planning document. In Baghdad, top U.S. Ambassador Ryan Crocker accused Iran of increasing its support of militias in Iraq. In this, just the second meeting between the two countries in more than 30 years, Crocker admitted to several heated exchanges over 7 hours of talks, the goal of the meeting to work on stabilizing Iraq. In Afghanistan, the Taliban's extended the deadline for the release of 23 Koreans taken hostage last week. The militants demand Taliban prisoners be released and South Korea withdraw its troops. Negotiations are ongoing. A new survey shows a sharp drop in Muslim support for suicide bombings. The Pew Research Center survey looked at data from 47 countries. In Lebanon alone, those who said such attacks are sometimes justified dropped from 74% to 34%. Five nurses and a doctor imprisoned for more than 8 years in Libya are back home. They were released last night and flown to Bulgaria, where their president gave them an immediate pardon. The medics were accused of deliberately infecting children with AIDS, a charge they have consistently denied. Rescue efforts continue in Britain, which is suffering its worst flooding in 60 years. An estimated 350,000 are still without fresh water, although power has been restored to most homes. Two deaths have been reported. More rain is forecast later this week. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
It's not hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now, in 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. Or, for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission, Mary Knoll.
study released today shows that lowering your cholesterol too much may increase your risk of cancer. Researchers found that patients who take statin drugs to lower cholesterol had a higher risk of cancer. The study did not show, however, that the statin drugs themselves are cause for concern. The FDA says the recent recall of 80 brands of canned meat products may involve millions of cans still on store shelves. Investigators at the Georgia plant say 16 out of 17 cans tested contain the bacterium that causes botulism. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says last year the U.S. recorded the lowest traffic death rate in recent history. Agency officials cited tough law enforcement and increased safety features in vehicles. New York City's health department says blood tests show one out of four city dwellers has elevated levels of mercury. Officials say the mineral is tied to consumption of fish. Online retailer Amazon saw its second quarter earnings surge 250% due to strong sales growth. Amazon's shares rose 18% in late trading. Light sweet crude is trading at $73.56 a barrel. On news from Countrywide that mortgage problems could spread to more than just the subprime rate loans, the Dow ended on a down note, very big, 226 points down. This is the Quality News Network.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
6 and a half past the hour. 2 hours of the show already gone. I really, really appreciated David Swanson taking all of that time. I got to meet David at Camp Democracy last year, and he is by far one of the most committed progressive activists that I have ever had the pleasure of meeting. A couple of things. We're going to go straight to the phones. You know the number, 877-443-2366 is toll free. If you want to save us a nickel, 304-658-5453. Email comes into Bob at headonradio.com. It's easy, and what I don't respond to on the air, I definitely try to respond to off the air. So, you know, I don't know. You want to do smoke signals, semaphore, telegraph? We're working on it. We're working on it. But two things in the QNN news that just sort of bugged me there. First of all, and this is a question. This is one of those what would they call it in college? Topics in journalism theory questions. Does it do you any, and I know there are people in the chat room right now who are taking statin drugs. I'm taking a statin drug because we've got to reduce our cholesterol. My cholesterol is so high that when they put the blood in the test tube and they walk, by the time they walk it around the corner, before they get it to the centrifuge, butter rises to the top of my blood, okay? I'm not kidding.
I think you're kidding.
I'm not kidding. You know, it's because I come from the Scots and Welsh and Norse stock that had to build fat stores to live through some really cold and brutal winters. You know, Gronk, me live in cave, me wrap in furs. But anyway, so you get this story that says, researchers have discovered that people who take statin drugs, their drugs are more likely to get cancer than people who don't take statin drugs, but statin drugs don't cause the cancer. With all due respect to our very, very good friends at QNN, who are merely reporting this stuff, I could have done without that. Because it sort of leads one on a sort of existentially absurdist road whereby you go, okay, so I'm trying to control my diet, I'm trying not to eat a bunch of hydrogenated oils, but I do have a bunch of really, really, I don't have a bunch of them, just one really bad habit. I'm a smoker, you know, oh, Jesus, you know, smoking. And now, even if I quit smoking, the drug that I'm taking to keep my heart from clogging up doesn't cause cancer, but it increases the likelihood of me having cancer. What kind of cancer? Skin cancer? Ugh. You know, this is the frustration of information overload. And the other thing, the canned food, the canned meat. I thought you would be interested in knowing one fact that is not being widely reported, and that, or it isn't. It's not. It, you know, the 16 out of 17 cans tested proved positive for botulism. Blah 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 blah. Okay, well that's a nice statistic, and we live in a society in which journalism is largely relegated to nothing more than the reportage of statistical facts. But there is a far more interesting fact inside the botulism, the rotten chili sauce story. Let's see. Spinach salad could kill you. A hamburger not properly cooked can kill you. Chicken not properly cooked can kill you. Now, if the hot dog doesn't get you, the chili on the hot dog will get you. This all leads inexorably toward toward an examination of every time I say the word capitalism, I get this vision from Monty Python's Monty Python and the Holy Grail with the serfs out playing in the mud and King Arthur standing. Oh, now come and see the violence inherent in the system. Help, help! I'm being repressed, bloody peasant. That's what I'm on about. We're anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it as that kind of thing. But really, you have to examine when you see these stories. You cannot help, if you're thinking about stuff at all, you can't help but examine the nature of how this gets to be. It gets to be the way it is. And it is this way because of the capitalist way of doing stuff. Okay? Oh, it's the free market. How many brands from this Castleberry's plant? You know, the companies or hired an outside firm to visit more than 8,500 retailers around the country because their poison crap is still on the street. Whew, mother. More than 80 types of canned chili, beef stew, corned beef hash, and other meat products. More than 80 types. That means that Castleberry's brand comes out of the Castleberry's plant. It also means that Kroger brand comes out of the Castleberry's plant. It also means that Food Lion brand comes out of the Castleberry's plant. And dog food comes out of the same plant that makes your corned beef hash. Did you ever wonder why dog food looks a lot like corned beef hash?
Dog food.
Horse, it's what's for dinner. But all of this is because of the way the business model that we have in, that has not we, not you, not me, not us, but certain incredibly greedy people have encouraged in the last 50 years, 60 years in this country. Consolidate, 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 consolidate. You know, funny, I thought that was the communist system where you only had one brand. Oh, wait, we've got different brands. They're just all the same stuff from the same plant. Oh, well, that definitely means we're not communist. Everything's okay. But it's not okay. Because the buried lead out of this particular story is how the botulism came to be in the canned meat products. Potted meat. Ingredients. Lips. No. How it got to be there. We're country folk here. Mama taught me to can. My grandmother taught me to can. And I know that when the instructions say that the jar's got to be under the boiling water for 15 minutes at a full boil, that it really means the jar has to be fully submerged under the fully boiling water for 15 minutes. And when it says get all the air bubbles out, it means get all the air bubbles out. Because air, never mind the science. all these cases of tainted food, botulism, were the result of typically commercially canned foods are heated long enough and to high enough temperatures to kill the spores. Mr. Melbourne confirmed that the botulism occurred in the chili sauce because the product was undercooked. Now, these are great big industrial vats of chili sauce. Not like when you make a pot of chili at home. And they are sealed containers, and they are monitored processes. And the rules say for X number of gallons, you cook it at X temp, at Y temperature for Z minutes. But somewhere along the way, some supervisor walked in and said, "Go ahead and cut it short, there, boy. We got to get this order out. We got to get it going down the line. We got to get it going. Got to get it labeled. Got to get it in boxes. Got to get it on the truck. Got to get it out of here. It's affecting our profit margin." And for that reason, any number of Americans are already sick, and any number more will get sick soon. And some will die. Because there is no other rational explanation for why you undercook. Well, yeah, there is. There's another rational explanation. Maybe the industrial chili sauce vat broke down. "That's all right. It's hot enough. We can't throw all this out. You know how much it costs to make a big old vat of chili sauce like this here? Can it and ship it." That's another rational explanation. And some working dude or working woman making $6 an hour in Augusta, Georgia, if they're lucky, does not get to say, "Boss, you know, we can tomatoes at home, and you always gotta let it. You gotta let them cook long enough, or they'll make you sick." Can't say that, because then boss man will say, "Get your stuff together and get on out of here. We don't need the likes of you." And there's no shop steward to go to because it's not a union shop, so there's no quality control. From a labor side of the process. But out of the love of money, and what does the good book say? For the love of money is the root of all evil. This is the love of money. This is money over people. This is profit over well-being. And that is why the botulism scare is going down. Seems plain to me. Let's go talk to David up in Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I was listening to what you were saying about canned foods, and I never ate canned foods as a kid, hardly. And I never used salt on my food at all either, because that's just the way I was brought up. So when I remember trying some Campbell's soup one time, I couldn't eat it because
when you were growing up every time you had soup, somebody was making the soup?
Yeah.
You're fortunate, David.
I know. My mom is
Your mom's an angel.
She's Italian, you know, so we'd always have that. You'd always have the Italian dishes, or you know, the different kinds of soup concoctions.
Oh yeah, the minestrone, pasta fagioli. Yeah, oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that. And but one of the things she did make a lot was the ramen stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Off and on, she would do that from the packets. And I remember I could never put the, when I started making, I could never put the whole flavor ingredients. I could only put like a quarter of it because, I mean, that's how strong it was to me, this salt and everything. I was like, this is ridiculous. Why do I need this much? I could never understand why people would put, you know, salt on everything when salt is in the food. I would see people put salt on their sandwiches, and I would be like, but are you just doing this out of habit? Because you got your salt in your meat.
Yeah, some of us are salt junkies. I mean,
yeah, I understand that.
I mean, when it comes to a big old steak, I don't want any A1 sauce. I don't want any Heinz 57. I don't want any, you know, this or that or the other. I want salt.
Right.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm the Star Trek salt monster. Just
well, you know, yeah. Talking about the canned foods, the canned food problem is a lot like our problem in Washington, D.C. We have canned leaders. And they're with preservatives and curated with lots of salt and ingredients that we really don't need, but they just put it in there. I don't know, maybe they get a deal from all the chemical companies or something.
Well,
I wouldn't,
you know,
doubt it.
Well, look at next time, and you probably don't have to worry about this kind of stuff, David, but next time you're in the store, take a look at the label of something that is fat-free, okay? Because fat is evil. Well, ask any trained French chef, and they will also tell you le gras et la flavour, and boy, that's poorly pronounced, but fat is flavor. So what happens in fat-free stuff that's on the supermarket shelf is they replace the fat with salt in order to make it seem like it tastes like something. So that's why it's there. You know, the stuff is highly salted because the human palate recognizes salt as a beneficial thing. That's why we like it. It's part of our caveman nature. Same thing with fat. We like fat, even though we don't live a caveman life. We have our internal biochemistry is such that we crave fat.
Right, but in a way, it's not salt. It's artificial salt or something, a hybrid of salt.
Well, some of it is, like monosodium glutamate.
Yeah.
You know, salt, sodium, monosodium. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I get what you're talking about.
Yeah. And the other thing I was going to talk about was I have a few stories on deck. And one of the things is, I don't know, did you catch a story about Moby getting a letter from Karl Rove?
No. Moby?
this is funny. This is awesome.
Moby is on Karl Rove's radar scope?
Well, this is insane. You guys got to hear this letter. Listen to this letter.
Okay.
Moby has an unusual new friend. He told Politico.com about how his mother once gave a baby up for adoption, and he therefore has a half-brother somewhere. I jokingly said, maybe it's Karl Rove. Moby emailed us. After the story appeared online, he got a strange letter from the White House. Check this out. The envelope looked as if it was from 1952, he said. The letter was from Rove, and it said this. Dear Moby, or is that Mr. Moby? It's not me. I have no musical ability, and I'm 19 years older, assuming you're 37. So you can breathe easier. On the other hand, James Carville is musically inclined and bald, too. Do you like crawfish etouffee? Moby, a liberal vegan, wrote us, needless to say, I was a bit stunned. A letter from President Bush's brain? The man without whom Bush would be doing the alligator on the floor of a Hooters at Velocity? That's a good line, by the way. Moby should be a writer.
Well, he kind of is, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, a comic writer, though.
That's good. Well, you know, he's, what is he, the great-grandson of Herman Melville? He comes by it honest.
Right. You know what really struck me about this whole story, though?
What's that?
He told Politico.com. Politico? What the hell? You're a vegan. They're going to put you in a concentration camp.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Politico, that's not exactly a gang of...
Oh, my God. You know...
Raging, you know, hacky-sack-kicking, you know, progressives. No.
You know, this goes back to being inundated by propaganda and not realizing who you're going to. And this happens a lot to progressives. Like, I can see... I could see someone like... if Kurt Vonnegut wasn't told, I could see him going on a Michelle Malkin show on Fox in the near future if he was still alive. and he'd be like, well, why am I here now? And I didn't know it was going to be like this or something like that.
Somebody give me some tofu. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but Politico, what the hell?
Oh,
and then the other story I wanted to mention.
I wanted to mention
this Cheney thing of the. I don't know if you read any of these anecdotes from the book that Steve Hayes wrote, which I really don't. You can trust about as far as you can throw him. Which would be conveniently off the Grand Canyon, but that's another story. I was. One of the interesting things about it was, did you read any of it or?
No.
Okay, one of the interesting things about it is there's a quote in there where he talks about Patrick Leahy and he says one of the reasons why I told him to go F yourself is because it looked like Patrick Leahy was going to kiss him.
Huh? David, you bring me some stuff to the program once in a while that just makes me feel like I need to. Smoke something. Take
raw story. Now
I'm sure it's there.
Now here's that one was an interesting anecdote, and then the other one that was interesting that Steve Hayes got out of Cheney, which if I was a Democrat, I would put this in highlighted yellow, and send it out on their mailing list. And this is what he said. He said, "I know that it's a mistake now that we should have let from the start the Iraqi government be in power." Duh!
Oh my God! The barn's burning! The barn's burning! The horses are gone. Well, I'm glad we closed the barn doors.
Now the third thing is a weird story. It's a weird story, but nobody's mentioned it. But I think it's a good anecdote because it gives you an example again of these Masonic saviors of this megalomania complex. Cheney was watching, I kid you not, with the family Peacemaker. With George Clooney and Nicole Kidman on the chair, right? Someone comes in the room and says, "What's this movie about?" I don't think that's I don't think that's the accent they used. I kind of, you know,
yeah.
I utilize that in theater or whatever.
Well done.
Yeah, Mayberry Machiavelli.
Yeah, theater of the mind.
Yeah. So then Cheney stands up and he literally talks for 10 minutes about the plot about Peacemaker, which involves trying to stop a doomsday device. And he gets really animated talking about it. And Lynn is sitting there nodding her head, being like, "Yep, that's what you gotta do. That's what you gotta do."
Jesus.
So, if you think about it, I think this is where we can find out. That little anecdote told me a lot of where Cheney's mind is. He wants to be that savior, like Jack Bauer. I was talking about.
Well, they can't separate reality from fiction, okay?
But Bob, they also want to be as corrupt as and lawlessness as they want to be, and it may make tons and tons of profits, and they think they can have it always without anyone holding them accountable, and it looks like that is the truth right now. So the question you have to ask yourself is, do you want to? The pseudo pretend Jack Bauer who believes in lawlessness, in torture, corruption of the U.S. government and the economy. The U.S. government, we should really change it to corruption of the U.S. people. We should stop calling ourselves government. I mean, if we started calling ourselves, we said the government is now the people. I mean, that to me, that would put a wrench in the works because automatically you would be saying, well, we can't be for the people. We need smaller people. You know, it would totally flip things around. Nobody would say it. Wait a minute.
Yeah, we don't need smaller government. We need smaller people.
Yeah, I know.
Jeez.
Because short people have no reason to live. So.
Thank you, Mr. Newman.
And then the other thing I wanted to mention, I don't know if you read this about P. Sabin Willett.
Mm-mm.
He got his federal. This guy's a hero in my book. He's the guy who was doing the Gitmo trials, Guantanamo trials.
Yeah.
And he got his federal. He won in court. His 2-year battle. They have to turn over the information, all of the information from the Gitmo inmates.
So
really, we should really give a hand of applause to Pete Saban Willett for doing this, because he spent a lot of time. And there's actually a good picture, I think, at Huffington Post that says it has a black backing and a white lettering. It says, "Our government. I believe our government shouldn't believe in secret prisons and in torture," or something like that. And he really put himself out there for these court cases, and a lot of people said, "You're not going to get anywhere." And this just goes to show that he got the ruling that he wanted. It's a resounding, resounding indictment on the Guantanamo. What we knew, but you know, we're going to know a lot more when they hand over these records. And you didn't hear that in the news, isn't that something?
No, you don't. We don't want to put that in the news, David, because that's. You know, it's legal stuff, and it's legal mumbo-jumbo, and, you know, most people can't understand.
Right, but basically, well, I mean, if you could tie that to Lindsay Lohan somehow. I can't believe she's back, by the way.
Oh, I know. Not Lindsay Lohan, please.
All right, I won't mention that, but, you know, I just think, you know, Bob, if you could, maybe in the future, two things that I think that would be of good use for this program. One thing is maybe we could have somebody be, you could get a correspondent about the flooding in that's going on in England right now.
Well, you know, it might be, God willing, we might hear from our good friend Andy.
Maybe. Or if you maybe get in touch with someone online who is in those areas. Because I read somewhere that, get this, it's nearly two inches to the power plant. If it goes past the 2 inches, 500,000 people are going to lose their power.
Not good.
I know, not good. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was maybe you could have Pete Saban Willett on the program, and maybe
I would like to get him on, because just the to talk about the trial procedure. You know, it was brought up in these Gonzalez hearings today.
Right.
That all of these desperate criminals that were holding it at Guantanamo, they haven't successfully prosecuted one of them.
That's what I'm saying.
And Gonzo says that it's because, we've afforded him all kinds of nifty rights, and they've hired really good lawyers. And they're, you know, we're in there fighting, but, you know, it's a hard fight to, oh, bull. It's because they didn't do anything. We've got sheep herders and goat herders in Guantanamo.
I know. And then a lot of people don't realize of the rendition of what a rendition mission involves, where you have a secret Gestapo pick you up from the middle of nowhere. And I mean, to sign on to that, you're not believing in, I don't know, I refuse to call it the government, the people anymore. You don't believe in the people anymore, so you need to. So we need to hold the culprits responsible.
Exactly.
And it comes down to that. And then you know, I just think that having that guy on the program would probably help us understand a little bit better of this verdict that just came down.
Well, I'll see if I can contact him and get him on.
I'll try to find some contact info for you in the meantime, Bob.
Okay, I appreciate it. David, you have a wonderful night.
All right, you too, Bob.
Bye now.
Later.
Okay, since that did get mentioned in the Gonzo hearings today, I'd like to go to that audio and just we're going to freeform a little bit of this. Agnes, set the Wayback Machine for 2 minutes and 45 seconds. And we're gonna start with Arlen Specter, because this is really the heart and soul of... yeah, there you go. Let's try Arlen Specter.
But in a classified setting.
Well, if you won't answer that question, my suggestion to you, Attorney General Gonzalez, is that you review this transcript very, very carefully. I do not find your testimony credible, candidly. When I look at the issue of credibility, it is my judgment that when Mr. Comey was testifying, he was talking about the terrorist surveillance program. And that inference arises in a number of ways. principally because it was such an important matter that led you and the chief of staff to Ashcroft's hospital room. When you say that you were going to get Ashcroft's approval on another intelligence matter, it strains credulity that it would be other than the foremost program to go to his hospital room when he's under sedation. And when you testified here this morning earlier,
okay,
that you were looking...
Now, what this has to do with is the fact that you know the whole bedside strong arm and the guy Ashcroft, and he's whacked out of his mind with painkillers with pancreatitis. Gonzalez is now saying that they didn't go to his hospital room over the secret illegal spying program, the domestic spying program. You know, the program where some sleazebag at the NSA is listening in on your phone calls to find out the secret recipe for Aunt Mabel's maple fudge. No, they didn't go over that. Gonzo sat there and testified that they went over something else. It was a different matter. You know, what it was really, Senator, is we were going to find out what Ashcroft did with the drape that he put over that evil naked lady, the evil naked lady aluminum statue of justice. Somebody moved the drape, and we just wanted to get it back because we knew what it meant to him. You know, we figured it'd make him happier. Bug spray. Now, that's Arlen Specter, mind you, telling Alberto Gonzalez, the Attorney General of the United States, that he doesn't find him credible. What does this mean? Please bear in mind that Arlen Specter found H.R. Haldeman credible, because Arlen Specter was part of the Watergate hearings. Arlen Specter thought H.R. Haldeman was credible. He thought Bob Ehrlichman was credible. He thought Jeb Stuart Magruder was credible. He thought Spiro T. Agnew was credible. He thought Richard Nixon was credible. This should give you an idea of the low standard of credibility that Arlen Specter applies to matters. It should tell you that when he says, "I don't think you're credible," he says, "I think you're lying so badly that I, a fellow Republican who would crawl over ground glass to try to believe you to be credible, I think you're lying." So, you know, that's pretty profound stuff, isn't it? Now, Agnes, run forward to 1645, please. And we'll hear, that's good, we'll hear a very interesting question.
"With the EOP, Executive Office of the President, I assume that is, will apply in parallel fashion to communications with the Office of the Vice President."
Now, this is Senator Whitehouse.
"Let me ask you first, what on earth business does the Office of the Vice President have in the internal workings of the Department of Justice with respect to criminal investigations, civil investigations, and ongoing matters?"
"You're not." "As a gentleman, I would say that's a good question."
"Why is it here, then?"
"I'd have to go back and look at this."
"I'd like to know where this came from and how that addition was made. Then if you look at the very back, the very last paragraph, once again, there's a final paragraph set off by asterisks that pretty much undercuts everything that was said in the previous enumerated paragraphs. And here, you can see the difference, but it's almost identical with the previous memorandum, only it adds some things. "Notwithstanding any procedure limitation set forth above, the Attorney General may communicate directly with the President, Vice President," so far same as the Ashcroft memorandum. Then you add, "their chiefs of staff, counsel to the President," then you add, "or Vice President." Somebody took the trouble to write in counsel to the Vice President and provide that individual access to ongoing criminal investigations, ongoing civil investigations, and ongoing other investigative matters.
I don't know whether or not that in fact has happened, so I want to I want to emphasize
part of what
that.
We do around here is to prevent things from happening.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
When you kick down doors, you invite people to do it, whether or not it's been done.
And I agree. And okay. On its face, I must say, sitting here, I'm troubled by this.
Yep.
I will
and
say,
if you continue, just let me finish, because we're not done with the paragraph.
All right.
If you go further on down, what was the staff of the Office of the President has become the staff of the White House office, and the entire Office of Management and Budget's been thrown in. So you come here today with, I think, to put it mildly, highly diminished credibility, asserting to us that you want to restore the Department of Justice. And yet, here, where there is something that you could do about it, since our past discussion, nothing's been done. The memo that has your signature makes it worse. And we've agreed that this connection between the White House and the Department of Justice is the most dangerous one from a point of view of the potential for the infiltration of political influence into the department.
Okay, pause. This was an astonishing series of questions. And by the way, counsel for the vice president, that's a gentleman by the name of David Addington, who, it turns out, if you read the Washington Post series a couple of weeks ago, is actually the architect of a lot of this vile, vicious, murderous vice presidential policy, because, you know, I hate George Bush as much as the next guy, but the torture stuff originated in the vice president's office, plain and simple. And it was Addington's doing. That's what this is about. Now, Agnes, if you'll move forward to 29, there's an exchange with Charles Schumer in which, frankly, you know, just like every other question, Gonzalez won't give a straight answer. He will not, for the life of him, give a straight answer. And it has to do with the question of who sent him to Ashcroft's room. You know, this is taking on the character of a murder mystery. Some of this is turning into Who Killed Cock Robin. This, or maybe it's turning into an Agatha Christie or whatever. There is real, real dangerous stuff going on here, and you know, frankly, I appreciate them having these hearings and stuff, but this is going to take a grand jury inquiry, quite frankly, and this is where that sort of thing begins. But please, Agnes.
He says for the Constitution.
They had a very important meeting at the White House over one of the most...
I didn't ask that. You discussed the meeting.
I'm answering your question, Senator,
Who sent you? Did anyone tell you to go?
It was one of the most important programs for the United States. It was important. It had been authorized by the President. I'll just say that the Chief of Staff to the President of the United States and the Counsel of the President of the United States went to the hospital on behalf of the President of the United States.
Did the President ask you to go?
We were there on behalf of the President of the United States.
I didn't ask you that. Did the President ask you to go?
Senator, we were there on behalf of the President of the United States.
Why can't you answer that question?
That's the answer that I can give you, Senator.
Well, can you explain to me why you can't answer it directly?
Senator, again, we were there on an important program for this President on behalf of the President of the United States.
Pause.
Did you talk?
Pause. We were there on behalf of the President of the United States. We were there on behalf of the President of the United States. We were there. What this means is he knows he can't say the President sent us, because as with so many things, the key concern of this White House is to provide George W. Bush with what is called plausible deniability. I didn't send him to strong-arm Ashcroft. No. So who did? Karl Rove? Or was it someone else?
to the president about it beforehand?
Senator, obviously there were a lot of discussions that happened during that period of time. This involved one of the president's premier programs.
Sir, you're before this committee. You are before this committee. You're supposed to answer questions. You've not claimed any privilege. I don't think there is any here. And I asked you a question, and you refused to answer it.
Senator,
why?
If I can answer the question, I will answer the question.
I know, but could you tell me why you can't answer this question?
Senator, because, again, this relates to activities that existed when I was in the White House, and because of that, with
respect
to...
Wait. Being in the White House does not afford you the right not to answer questions under oath. It's very important that be gotten across. Schumer said, you're not claiming privilege, and Gonzalez didn't say, oh, yes, I am. And then he turns around and says, this pertains to things that happened while I was in the White House. Now, it's either privileged communication or it's not. If it's privileged, you know, even if Schumer came across the table and beat him across the head with a gavel, he couldn't make him say it. So, the next question comes along.
Your specific questions, I will go back and see whether or not I can answer the question.
Did the vice president send you?
And, Senator, we were there on behalf of the president.
Did you talk to the vice president about it?
We were there on behalf of the president.
Will not answer
uh-huh!
that question, is
uh-huh!
it? Is that correct?
Wait, pause. J'accuse! Did the vice president send you? I went on behalf of the president. Did the vice president send you? I went on behalf of the president. Oh, and we just spent an hour talking about impeaching Cheney. I wonder why we'd want to do that. Could it be that he is the rotten, evil bastard that's behind all of this?
Yeah, he is.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Jim for a minute. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening. How you doing, Bob?
Doing good, you?
Reasonably well. Can we come back to what you were talking about as far as pure food and drug is concerned?
Sure.
When I lived in D.C., at least once, twice a month, maybe three times, over WTTG in D.C., you would get water warning. Have you ever heard of a disease called cryptosporidiosis?
Yes, I have.
Well, they would have those warnings periodically and telling you not to drink the water, and particularly people who had any type of immune compromise situation. And cryptosporidiosis occurs in sheep, and when sheep get it, they have to kill them. Now, going back to the Castleberry Foods and things like that, the assets of the FDA and the Pure Food and Drug and things like that have been so degraded, so compromised, that they can't really protect our food and water supply. And, of course, going back to the factories that manufacture foods and things like that, I guess their deregulation has permitted them to just basically give those people carte blanche to put anything out into the food stream that they possibly can. And this has been going on ever since Reagan.
Yeah, it has been. And that's a little bit of what I was talking to David Swanson about as far as impeachment's concerned, Jim. Every time we think we've got a real monster on our hands and it can't get any worse, well, we thought, you know, we thought Richard Nixon was the absolute epitome of a lawless outlaw president. Well, we were wrong because we got Reagan and we got Iran-Contra.
Well, you know, at least Nixon left certain good things in the wake of his presidency.
Yeah, and he had the common decency and regard for the Constitution to leave office as well. So we get Reagan, and we think, well, you know, and Iran-Contra, and, well, you know, it can't get any worse than him. My God, he was awful. Now we've got George W. Bush, and what we get is out of the failure to impeach Reagan, we get Bush. Okay, because we keep setting these things up, these levels of tolerance. And I fear that by not impeaching George Bush and Dick Cheney, we have set ourselves a bar so high for impeachment now that, frankly, someone on the order of a Mussolini couldn't get impeached.
Well, I was thinking of Papa Doc and the Tonton Macoute.
Yeah, sure.
Same thing, you know. But, I mean, as far as the protection of what we eat and what we drink is concerned, one of the missions of the federal government, and, you know, we can go back to Upton Sinclair. Remember that book he wrote, The Blackboard Jungle, about the meatpacking?
Yeah.
And it seems as though a lot of that stuff is just being lost in the interest of profits of the major corporations. Going back to who really rules this country, it is a Capitol Hill, it's K Street.
Well, and they tried to consolidate that during the Republican Congresses with the K Street Project.
Well, there it is, and there you have it.
And that's what makes, you know, that's what makes real meaningful campaign finance reform so utterly, utterly critical to the future of our republic, Jim. I don't know what's so hard about telling an elected representative who's getting paid something around $130,000 a year and has the best socialized medicine the United States can provide. I don't know what's so hard about telling him he can't take any money, any trips, any anything from anybody. That's a pretty simple law, isn't it?
I would think so.
I mean, if a member of Congress really, really needs to go on a fact-finding mission to the old course at St. Andrews, Congress can approve that and will pay for it. He doesn't need a pharmaceutical company to pay for that or a casino.
No, he doesn't. Like I say, it's the worst money, the worst government that money can buy.
It is indeed. It is indeed.
And I thank you, sir.
You have a good evening, Jim.
You too, sir.
Bye now. Is it a matter of not being able to see the forest for the trees? Is that why our Congress, or is it just that they're in love with the dough? You know, war is good money. Last night we talked in talking with Dave Von Kleist. While I disagree with him rather profoundly on a number of issues, I don't disagree with him on the war. I don't disagree with him on the profiteering that's taken place in this war. I don't disagree with him about the mercenaries in this war. We can talk about bringing our troops home. Who mandates that the mercenaries have to go home? Go home to Honduras, go home to El Salvador, go home to Peru, go home to Israel, go home to South Africa. It becomes more and more intractable with every minute we allow to pass by without calling these criminals to account. Now, let's roll on just a couple more minutes as the program winds down. And, I'm not going to bother with any of this because, you know, you don't need to be nauseated. But at one point, John Kyle, who is a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, John Kyle got to ask some questions. He is, of course, a no-good, godless, soulless, motherless Republican from Arizona. Now, here we are talking about who said what and who tried to strong-arm Gonzalez, or who tried to strong-arm Ashcroft. In the middle of all this... Oh, wait, let's do, just for the fun of it, 49 minutes and 30 seconds, please, Agnes. In the middle of all this heady stuff, this heavy, heavy, serious stuff, John Kyle gets a chance to answer questions, and this is what he does.
Represent a threat to the United States, need to be held somewhere, and there are no better alternatives. Almost nobody wants them in the United States. You can't just let them go. Sending them to foreign countries is problematic, among other reasons, for the reasons you
discussed. You want to take the oath and testify,
is
Senator?
Is that your understanding? And if not, what is your understanding?
Yes.
Do you have any different reasons?
Yes.
For desiring to close Gitmo, for example, because there's, to your knowledge or use, or
it gets better,
suspicion,
I promise.
Is there anything going on down there that might be a violation of either U.S. law or applicable treaties or conventions?
But quite the contrary. I think the people who've gone down there, from this body, from the House, other countries have come away favorably impressed with what's going on down there.
I just want to associate myself with the remarks of Senator Hatch. It would be nice if we didn't have to have any prisons, for that matter, and it would certainly be good if we didn't have to have a place for these threats to America.
But shall we sing? Let's all sing
somewhere.
Lee Greenwood.
And I know of no better alternative than where they're being held right now.
Oh, but here it comes.
Let me ask.
Now, wait. Pause. Okay, so we've had Guantanamo. You know, oh gosh, you poor people. You have to keep those dirty goat herders in Guantanamo because, you know, they want to blow up the local Walmart or whatever. You know, just silliness. And the only answer the Gonzo gives is yes. Yes to what? Yes to I'd like another coffee. Yes to extra foam? Yes, I like it, Senator Kyle, that you're doing for me what Monica did for Bill Clinton. But that's okay. Senator Kyle is a serious Republican on a serious committee, so therefore we know he's going to ask a serious question sooner or later, and here it is.
About a matter that you know I'm very interested in, and as a matter of fact, in a related, potentially related matter, there's a scandal now brewing with regard to the National Basketball Association.
What? Stop! 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 Now, you know, this is something that matters a great deal to me. There's a scandal brewing in the National Basketball Association. He's asking him basketball questions. So did you have the over the other night? Holy cats! The fate of the Republic hangs in the balance, and John Kyle can... Oh, let me ask you about basketball. You a Knicks fan? Oh, I bet you're a Washington Wizards fan, aren't you? No, go ahead.
Entities in particular, the NFL, Major League Baseball, basketball, the NCAA, amateur athletics, have for a long time been concerned about Internet betting, which is illegal under most state law.
I can't stand it anymore. I mean, my God, it was so bad that John Kyle was having to lob the softballs to Gonzalez, and then he'd have to leave the table and go and swat him out of the park for him, because even Gonzalez was going, damn, this is just a bit much. This is embarrassing. We're going to... I think... I'm inclined to save a little bit of this for tomorrow, because there's some brilliant stuff with Charles Schumer that you deserve to hear if you haven't already. Okay, let's quit for the night.
Yeah, please.
Fascinating conversation coming up at half past the hour in a little bit on Strictly Confidential with our good friend Peter Godbold. With the Servicemen's Legal Defense Network. I hope you'll stick around for that. Thanks, everyone, for participating in every means by which you did, be it email, the chat room, phone calls, or just sitting quietly and hoping that I make it to the end of another program and crossing your fingers and lighting incense and stuff. Thanks to Agnes for producing. And the next time somebody calls and tells her that she must feel real good about being married to that fag Bob, little bastard's going straight to the air, and baby, we are going round. Many thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, whiterosesociety.org. Everything that happens here happens because Ben helps to make it happen. Also, our thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters. Every day they go out and they build the American dream, and by helping us get this network started, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR. Gina, it's all for you.
Quality News Network. The Dow suffered its biggest one-day decline since March. We'll have closing numbers coming up. At a meeting held in Baghdad, U.S. Ambassador Ryan Crocker accused Iran of increasing its support of militants in Iraq. In this, just the second meeting between the two countries in more than 30 years, Crocker said there were several heated exchanges over 7 hours of talks. In a speech delivered to military men and women at a Charleston Air Force Base in South Carolina today, President Bush said, quote, "The facts are that Al-Qaeda terrorists killed Americans on 9/11, they're fighting us in Iraq and around the world, and they're plotting to kill Americans here at home again," end quote. Last night, a Democratic presidential debate was held in the same city, Charleston, and all eight candidates ripped apart the president's Iraq war agenda. A new survey shows a sharp drop in Muslim support for suicide bombings. The Pew Research Center survey looked at data from 47 countries. In Lebanon alone, those who said such attacks are sometimes justified dropped from 74% to 34%. In Afghanistan, the Taliban has extended the deadline for the release of 23 Koreans taken hostage last week. The militants want 23 Taliban prisoners released in South Korea to withdraw its troops. Negotiations are ongoing. Five Bulgarian medical workers in prison for more than 8 years in Libya are back home in Bulgaria. The recently sworn-in president of France's wife, Cecilia Sarkozy, was instrumental in their release. The humanitarians were accused of purposely infecting children with AIDS, a charge they have consistently denied. Upon their arrival home, they were pardoned by the Bulgarian president. The NFL is wondering if any other players are possibly involved in dogfighting in addition to Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick. Each team has been asked to investigate their players to see if they have any involvement in the blood sport. Vick and his three co-defendants face a federal judge on Thursday. Wildfires continue to rage across the West. The over half a million acre Murphy Fire in Idaho